Other People's Flowers is a podcast for stories, poetry, and essays. Thank you for listening.
This week's work comes from Anna Vidasavljevic from Serbia, currently living in Indonesia. She has had her work published in Down in the Dirt, Scar Publications, Literary Yard, RYL, Refresh Your Life, The Caterpillar, The Curfew, Eskimo Pie, Cold Noon, Perspectives, Indiana Voice Journal, The Raven Chronicles, Sefu Bilingual Journal, Foliate Oak Literary Magazine, Quail Bell Magazine, Madcap Review, The Bookends Review, Gimmick Press, and Macro Mike. She worked on a GIEE 2011 project, Gender and Interdisciplinary Education for Engineers 2011. She also attended the international conference Bullying and the Abuse of Power in November 2010 in Prague, Czech Republic, where she presented her paper Cultural Intolerance. Speed Dating. The Wailing of Sirens. It didn't happen often in a small town like Burkeville. Ambulance? Maybe someone had a stroke, or even died. Police? Or someone made a false report of a bomb threat just to inject some excitement into the town's dullness. Anna was sitting in a chair and looking out the window. Such a beautiful, sunny, bright day. And warm, too. The winter cold had finally left the town. There were so many beautiful days in Burkeville. Pity there were no more unusual events to make these days special. Hannah had spent her entire life in Burkeville. It was her whole universe, and she didn't know any better. She knew there must have been some other amazing places out there to explore, but she was not an explorer, adventurer, and vagabond. Her hometown lulled her into a strange sense of its uniqueness. Hannah was a kind of boring person. She didn't have many interests. When she had been a child, she had always played with the same doll, and she had always watched the same cartoon. She had known it by heart. Once she grew up, her personality remained the same. She stuck to the quality of singularity. She would always go to the same coffee shop and drink a hot cappuccino without sugar. She ate in the same restaurant once or twice per week. If she was very hungry, she ate a tuna steak with French fries, but if her hunger was not so intense, she ate a Greek salad with a lot of feta cheese. Hannah had only one good friend, Susan, and they had known each other since kindergarten. They shared everything they knew or found out, and they knew absolutely everything about each other. Even when the last time one of them went to the dentist, had her period or migraine. Banalities they talked about every day were what actually entertained them. Anyway, there was not much to talk about. Hannah and Susan worked in the same bank, not in the same office though. They ate lunch together and went home together every day. They lived in the same street, same town, same bank, same street. They were doomed to sameness. Hannah lived alone. Her parents had died a few years ago, and her older brother had moved out from Burkeville more than 10 years ago. He was a journalist, and he travelled a lot, and he couldn't settle down to a small-town life. The last time Hannah had heard from him, a year ago, he had been in Myanmar. Susan lived with her parents and grandma. They had a big house, and Susan occupied the whole second floor. Both Hannah and Susan were spinsters. They were in their mid-40s. For a small-town opinion, they were doomed, and they would probably die alone. But it didn't seem to bother either Hannah or Susan. Hannah was a tall, blonde woman with a Roman nose, big blue eyes, high forehead, low brows, and very thin lips, almost invisible. Her cheeks were a bit chubby, but it only made her look younger. She had disproportional but quite unique features. She was not physically compelling, but she was kind and well-mannered, and no one could say anything bad about her. Susan was brunette, pretty stout and short. Her chin-length bob made her face look even rounder. However, her hawk nose, charming almond-shaped green eyes and full lips gave her an exquisite beauty. She had always had a lot of admirers. Men buzzed around her, not only because she was quite attractive, but sharp-witted and energetic as well. Hannah had always envied a bit her looks and inborn energy and enthusiasm, but not enough for one to say that she was jealous of Susan. Hannah had never met a man who wanted to marry her. When she was 22, she had dated an older man, who had been the same age as her father for almost 2 years. However, he made it clear that he hadn't wanted a wife and kids. He had been a divorcee, and he enjoyed his freedom. Hannah had been a kind of his girlfriend, but that hadn't stopped him from occasionally seeing other women. Once, Hannah had got fed up with all his womanizing fiestas. She had left him. After him, she had had a few relationships, but nothing worth mentioning. Susan, on the other hand, had always had men who had been deeply in love with her. Almost all of her boyfriends had loved her and wanted to marry her, but she had never been ready for marriage and kids. When she had been 35, she had fallen in love with a man her own age, who had also worked in the bank. They had dated for a year, and then he had proposed to her. She had loved him, and it seemed to her that maybe she would be keen on marrying him. However, she had been scared. She had been afraid that the marriage would ruin her otherwise simple, content, and easy life. She couldn't give up her own freedom. It had always been so precious to her. She had always lived in a self-contained bubble that opened up occasionally for other people, but just temporarily. Once they started feeling too comfortable in that bubble and occupied too much space of it, the bubble threw them out, and Susan had felt that she couldn't be free with a husband. Therefore, she had said no to the man. The man had been heartbroken. He had moved to the other town, never to return. Susan had been sad after this event, and for many years she hadn't dated any man. The two friends, Hannah and Susan, appeared to be happy with their lives. Sometimes they would express a desire to meet men with whom they could share houses, beds, and all other sorts of things couples do. Hannah seemed to miss it more than Susan, but anyway, they were not desperate or depressed. They did what they wanted, and they lived their own lives as they wished. Even though, for someone else, their lives were not something to envy, they were happy. But something happened that shook their lives, as well as the lives of many other Burkeville citizens, mostly female. A rich man, whose nickname Goldie everyone knew, but whose real name no one knew, and who was single as well, and who was famous in the entertainment industry, opened the Speed Date Rooftop Garden. This totally new and up to then unusual place was on the top of the tallest building in Burkeville, on its 7th floor. The whole town could be seen from there, and nights filled with stars and moonlight were a beautiful spectacle. There were no similar places miles and miles around. There were no speed date centres or similar dating clubs, even in other towns nearby. The novelty of the whole idea brought Goldie a lot of success. The Speed Date Rooftop Garden attracted a lot of people. Those people were of all ages, professions and interests. There were bachelors, spinsters, divorcees, widows and widowers. There were teachers, bankers, economists, engineers, writers, accountants, waitresses, masseurs, gardeners, designers, miners, brokers, firemen, chefs, cooks. The Speed Date Rooftop Garden was open twice per week, on Friday and Saturday, from 7 in the evening until midnight. And it worked like this. During the first 2 hours, from 7 until 9, following 10 minutes of conversation, a bell was rung, and all gathered men proceeded to the next lady, and then another 10-minute conversation began. The ladies always remained seated at their own tables. After each speed date, both men and women marked on their cards if they were interested in meeting their date again. These cards carried all the likes and dislikes of the place. They were a disappointment initiator and matchmaker. These cards were at 9 o'clock delivered to the hosts, who would later on, probably after midnight or the very next morning, provide those who had showed a mutual interest in seeing each other again with the other person's contact information. From 9 until midnight, the band was playing and food and drinks were served. People usually mingled. Hannah and Susan attended these speed date events. Susan had always had more matches. But after the first real date with any of her matches, she would decide not to see them again. Even though there were many interesting men she had met during those speed date nights, they seemed less interesting when on a real date with her. Hannah's first real dates were partially successful. There was a banker she was seeing for some time after their real date, but it turned out that he still hadn't forgotten his ex-wife and was not ready to move on and date someone else. Hannah was disappointed, but not so much. She liked the banker, but not enough to fall in love with him. Disappointments seemed to become so normal and casual that she didn't make a big deal of them. She would meet them, greet them, and let them go. That's how she dealt with disappointments. On Friday night, after a month of skipping speed date events, both Hannah and Susan decided to visit the Speed Date Rooftop Garden and try their luck. As usual, the Speed Date Rooftop Garden was full of people. For 2 hours, all of them were speed dating, nervously smiling, asking questions, giving awkward, already rehearsed answers, with more or less enjoying the evening. After the speed dates, Hannah and Susan sat together and chatted, looking around and making some cheeky comments. They both noticed that that night they both had had the speed date with a handsome accountant who obviously had charmed both of them. His name was Frank, and he used to live in a big city. However, Frank planned to move to Burkeville in a month, since he had inherited a house from his grandfather who had just passed away. He was tired of the city life and wanted to settle down, have a family and lead a quiet life. Frank was a perfect catch for small-town girls. The very next morning, Hannah and Susan learned that Frank had shown interest in both of them. They hurried to tell each other the news, and then after they giggled like schoolgirls. But for the first time, they both decided not to tell each other what they planned to wear for the date with Frank, what they intended to ask him, and what secret weapon they would use to seduce him. These things remained secret, despite the fact that they knew each other so well, and that they probably suspected what the other one was planning. They decided not to talk about it. Hannah was not as self-confident as Susan, and she feared that after the first real date, Frank might, and probably would, decide to continue seeing Susan. She felt sadness overcome her, but she tried to keep calm. Susan was quite confident that she would win this man. She believed that Hannah didn't have much chance with Frank, even though she loved her friend. She thought that Frank was out of Hannah's league. She was too reserved, clumsy, insecure, meek. Frank seemed like a man who wanted a different type of woman. Someone who would not be a submissive, but equal. Someone who had the same energy as he did, and someone who looked him in the eye when they talked. And that woman was Susan. Both Hannah and Susan seemed happy with the outcome of their first real date with Frank. Hannah believed that his smile, questions he had kept asking her, gentle touch of her hand, and the way he had flattered her a little bit, meant that they would keep seeing each other. At the end of the evening, he even kissed her cheek gently, held her hand for a while, and promised to call her the next day. Hannah had butterflies in her stomach. Susan was certain that their first real date was a complete success. He laughed loudly at her jokes, and he smiled every time she started talking. He looked her in the eyes, and many times during the evening mentioned that he had never seen such beautiful eyes. He walked her back home, since it was not far from the restaurant where they had had dinner, and promised to call her the following day. Hannah and Susan didn't call each other to tell each other how the date with Frank had been. They kept that for themselves and waited the following day, and for Frank's call. The next day, both of them were nervous, roaming around the living room and place where the telephone was. Hannah picked up the receiver twice to check if the phone was working, and Susan smoked cigarette after cigarette, nervously waiting for the damn phone to ring. The phone never rang either in Hannah's living room or in Susan's corridor. They didn't hear from Frank that or the next day. On Monday morning, they didn't talk too much to each other at work, and neither of them mentioned Frank, as if they had silently agreed that Frank was a forbidden topic. And they also felt that neither of them was lucky. They felt sorry for each other, but kept a distance, since it was awkward for both of them to talk now when they were hurt and disappointed. Hannah, who had faced so many disappointments, handled one pretty well. But Susan, the constant winner, was not capable of sorting out how and why this disappointment had struck her. She was over-emotional at home, frustrated at work, and on the verge of tears all the time. A week passed, and Hannah and Susan still didn't spend so much time together. But they slowly started forgetting the failed episode with Frank. Then there were rumours in the bank that a handsome accountant who had been seen around lately had started dating a local rich widow, Joanna. Joanna was a rich woman in her mid-50s, whose husband had died 3 years ago when he had left her all the wealth he had gained for many years working as an art dealer. Joanna was financially secure for life. She had probably been a pretty woman once, and she still had a pleasant face. But in her 50s, she was overweight and not attractive. Normally, the guys like Frank did not pay attention to the woman like Joanna. But this Frank was an exception. The small and boring town of Burkeville got the entertainment. The speculations and gossips about Joanna and Frank were the prime time news. The rich woman and the handsome man couldn't escape the discerning eyes of Burkeville citizens. They were surprised, but the wealth of the widow Joanna would have attracted not only Frank, but many other men. Anyway, they didn't know something about Frank that sooner or later would bring a shocking dose of interest among people in Burkeville. When Hannah and Susan heard these gossips about Frank and Joanna, they somehow forgot their own failure to seduce this man. The curiosity of the whole affair brought them back to each other. Finally, they talked about Frank and their disappointment and focused on repeating the gossip they had heard. Frank and Joanna rarely appeared in public together. Once in a while, someone would see them eating in some of the most expensive restaurants in town, or they would visit the golf club. While Frank was playing golf, Joanna would sit in the VIP lounge, far from the hungry for gossip eyes of people that usually read a book and drink a cocktail. No more than 2 months passed and someone heard from the local municipal clerk that Joanna and Frank got married. They got married with just two witnesses, and Joanna's daughter, who had come from the capital to attend this simple ceremony. There was no party, no celebration, and no invitees from Burkeville. The whole thing aroused even more curiosity. People in Burkeville were intrigued by the simplicity of the wedding process. Rich people usually loved showing off, but something here was fishy. And not that long after, someone who had known Frank's grandpa and the financial situation of Frank's family told someone else in secret. And then that one person confided to someone else that Frank had inherited not only the grandpa's house, but his huge debts as well. Poor Frank had had not much choice. He had had to abandon his pretty nonchalant lifestyle and come to this tedious town to take care of debts. And he had seemed to have found an easier way to do this task. He had decided to find a rich wife, and he had succeeded. He had found the goose that laid the golden eggs. When Hannah and Susan heard this, they breathed a sigh of relief. They thanked dear God Frank hadn't chosen one of them. Anyway, they were not wealthy enough for him. They both reminisced about their dates with Frank and how he had been curious about their salaries, finances, inheritance. They hadn't paid attention to those questions before, but suddenly everything seemed clear. The hot news was repeated and retold in many different versions for some weeks, maybe a month, and then the news became just warm and finally cooled off. Once in a while, some would notice that Frank was rarely in Burkeville, and that he had been often seen in the capital's famous clubs. Some wicked tongue spread rumours that Frank didn't even sleep with his wife anymore, while the others claimed that he had been seen with other women. Slowly but surely, Hannah and Susan forgot about the failed dates with Frank. They went back to their normal lives, but not the one before the speed date rooftop garden. That life had been totally forgotten. They went back to the one after. They visited this place often. Once in a while, they met some interesting men and dated them for some time, and they continued to work at the same bank, eat their lunch together, and share with each other everything they did. Every now and then, they would hear that Frank had beaten up his wife, that she had stopped going out, and that he had forbidden her daughter to come back home. But the news was not that breaking news anymore. The drowning of a child in the town's lake, a new presidential election, and the cheating scandal of the famous actress somehow put everything else in the shade. The world was moving. So did Burkeville. Even if it was in slow motion.
Thank you for listening to Other People's Flowers. Other People's Flowers is produced and edited by Hugo Gibson and Chris Kamonvutitam. If you enjoy the show, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. If you'd like to have your work featured on the program, please visit otherpeoplesflowers.com to see our submission guideline. Thank you.